This is the OTB Television Network, a service of Capital District Off-Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. I said at the end of Handicapper Support, we caught up with Brad Cox yesterday. Why don't we get right into it? Because with the early post time at Aqueduct today, I expect the pregame show to start early too, and we talked for a while with Brad, so I think we'll have the Brad interview and pretty much lead right into, I'll come back on, but we'll lead into the NYRA pregame show. So we'll jump right into it. Big weekend for Brad Cox, easy to root for. He's always been very accommodating to us, but you know, Monomoy girl, and then the story of her going back to him after getting sold for $9.5 million on Sunday night, and winds up with probably the eventual two-year-old champion with Essential Quality. So he'll have some horses with some hardware, Eclipse Award night, and may wind up with his own piece of Eclipse hardware this year as well. So up next, conversation reflecting back on his big, big Breeders' Cup weekend, it's Brad Cox. Happy to be joined now by a guy who had, and I said to him just before we went on the air, just a fabulous weekend last Friday and Saturday at Keeneland for the Breeders' Cup. Trainer Brad Cox, 8 Breeders' Cup runners, 4 winners. Brad, again, congratulations and thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Seth. Thanks for having me on the show.
Happy to have you on the show. And let's talk about it. 8 Breeders' Cup runners, you won with 4. The betting public made 3 of them favorites, Aunt Pearl, Nix Go, Monomoy Girl. So the betting public had confidence. But what were your expectations? I mean, to come in with 8, win with 4, 50% over the 2 days of the Breeders' Cup, what were your expectations going in?
I thought we had a tremendous shot to have a big weekend. We did. Like you said, three of the winners were favored, and Essential Quality was a clear-cut second choice to and deserved to be given what Jackie's Warrior had accomplished coming into the race. But, we thought we were set up for a huge weekend, and all 8 horses were training extremely well. We felt like they would all give, you know, A efforts, and it takes an A effort and A-plus effort to win those Breeders' Cup races. And you know, the ones that didn't win, I felt like performed very well just maybe the water was just a touch deep for those.
And talk about you and your team, in fact, and just the day, it's anybody who's had a big day experience of any kind, you're caught up in the day, the elation of the day, but now you've had a week to kind of reflect on just the great accomplishment. So how are you and the team feeling now around the barn and just reflecting back?
No, you know, it's great. I mean, you know, you think back and I was thinking the other day that, you know, just the year we've had with the actual 4 winners of the Breeders' Cup races were horses that were in fantastic form, that were undefeated on the year. Monomoy 4 for 4, the both juveniles 3 for 3, and Nix Go was 3 for 3. So just very proud of our staff, our team that we have in place, and thankful for the owners to give us an opportunity with quality stock, and that's basically what it comes down to, is just having the horses, and you know, we still have to prepare them and have them on top of their game and ready to perform at their top level, and you know, just very thankful for my help and everyone that's involved to have these horses peak on the right day.
And that's a perfect segue into Monomoy Girl. Let's kind of work back from her. The big win of the weekend, of course, with Monomoy Girl on her way now to a championship again this year. We're going to look at the stretch run here. She's going to be the number 10 horse. And about the eighth pole, it looks like it's going to be a little bit of a dogfight, but then she opens up 4-for-4 this year. Talk about the decision to train up to this race after the win September 4th in the La Troyenne at Churchill. You know, a couple months off, and as I understand, you guys considered the spinster, but what was the thought process to instead train up to the race?
The spinster would have been the logical spot if you felt like you needed a race, given it was there mile and eighth over the Keeneland Strip. Once we received the figure back from the La Troyenne, I spoke with, Saul Kuhman and Mike Dubb, and, you know, we kind of wrapped our heads around the idea of, like, you know, she's running huge figures, lifetime figures, that she's getting 8 weeks, 9 weeks between starts. And, our goal was to get to the Breeders' Cup. And I just had a strong feeling that with a race between the La Troyenne and the Breeders' Cup would really only be a negative. It would be great to win the Spinster. I mean, it's a race that we've taken 4 or 5 shots at and have yet to win. We took a strong shot at it this year with She Dares a Devil, and still unfortunate, just didn't get the job done. It just made sense for her. She's a filly that really seems like she thrives off of, a steady work pattern. And she seems to throw that big race if you can, go into a race off of a series of, say, 5-6 works. And, each week they get a little stiffer as you're getting closer to the race. And maybe the week before, you're not quite as much as maybe you're doing 2 and 3 weeks out with her. She just seems to really respond like that. I think it's definitely the way she likes it. And that's what it shows on the numbers. And, she's told us that, and we listen to her.
You've referenced the figs a couple of times. What kind of figures are you guys looking at?
I'm sorry.
You referenced the figures a couple of times, and I'm just curious, what kind of figures do you guys use?
In regards to what I've paid attention to her, what was the Ragusan sheets? She was around a 4 3/4 in the Ruffian, came back at the same number in the La Troyenne, and then it topped out at a lifetime best in the Breeders' Cup, which we felt like she was doing better than she's ever trained. So, those figures for her, they really stack up, and they seem to be honest, because she was training better than ever. I think a lot of people were standing on the backside Breeders' Cup week that with Walter Gallup, noticed that, like, man, she's really on it, and she's wanting to do more. I think the cool mornings helped her. She was just really on top of her game. And I think she peaked at a 3 3/4 on Saturday.
Very good. And let's just talk about kind of the spectacular career and the comeback after won the Breeders' Cup Distaff November 2018 and then returned to the track May of this year. So a long time off. I believe we were talking earlier this year, she was just about to come to your barn or had come to your barn down at the fairgrounds. That was back in February. So she gets the first race in May. Talk about getting her in February and the schedule you had for her to get her back to the races and how that all played out this year. And I'm curious if the COVID situation played into it.
It did a little bit. As far as getting her back, in the fall, she was at Windstar. Then we got her down to Paul Sharps. He was training her. I did a fantastic job. She came in good shape, looked phenomenal. We really took our time with her, got her back on the work tab. I'm not exactly sure now when she recorded her first published work. But, once COVID kind of hit, say, mid-March, we were fortunate enough to get the Louisiana Derby in there the end of May, or I think it was like the 23rd of March, I should say,
yeah.
Not May.
Yeah.
And once we got all that out of the way or finished up the meet, we decided to ship to Keeneland. And it was really kind of tough. She was one of the ones, I'm going to use the word fortunate, to get her out of the fairgrounds because they went on a limited training schedule. She was out of the fairgrounds into Keeneland in time before Keeneland had shut their backside down. So we got lucky as far as that goes, and she was able to do the bulk of a lot of the speed work and longer distant workouts there at Keeneland, where she loves Keeneland. And she prepared there leading up to her start, I guess it was the middle of May. And I think really based off how she was training. She was probably ready to go the end of April, but you know, she's not a horse that they ride races for every weekend, and it worked out really well that Churchill had a really nice condition allowance the opening day. They started back up here mid-May, and we brought her over, I believe, 3 days prior to the race, as soon as the backside opened, actually. And you know, we let her settle in here, gallop a couple days, and then she you know, made a good account of herself off a very long layoff.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the DRF PPs, and the buyer number for her was a little light on that, but it was a comeback off a long layoff. So how happy were you then? The follow-up in the Ruffian up at Belmont, the buyer jumps up to 104, and I think you had to feel that coming out of the Ruffian, she was the old Monomoy girl.
You're exactly right. Yeah, I mean, there was a little bit of a question mark with the figure off the layoff, and that was an odd track. I remember it was the fourth race on the card that day, I believe, and it was a drying out racetrack. Later in the day, it was listed as fast. I'm not certain what it was listed when she ran, but I know it was sealed. It was a little bit of a funny racetrack that day, but she run on anything, this filly, I do believe. And then, like you said, I think the Ruffian showed she was back. She was training extremely well. We shipped her up like 10 days prior to that. We did work her once at Belmont just because of the flight schedule. We had to go up a little earlier than we would have liked, but she had a really good breeze on, another track that was a little bit of a drying out track, but Javier Castellano breezed her that day, and you know, he had great things to say, and we felt pretty confident that, you know, she was going to run a big race in the Ruffian, and she showed up, and she did. I think she received, you know, nearly a top figure in that race, and obviously a lifetime best as far as buyers go.
And the story continued Sunday night, where she went over and went through the sales ring, $9.5 million. Spendthrift buys her and subsequently announces they're coming back next year, and that she's going right back to the Brad Cox barn. Was that a big surprise, or did you have an inkling that might happen depending on who got her out of the sales ring?
Well, yeah, ultimately, Seth, that's exactly right. It depended on who got her. But, you know, we'd had a conversation a couple days, or I'd had a conversation maybe 3 or 4 days prior to the sale, that, like, if they were to get her and we felt like she was, you know, still moving well out of the distaff, it would be something that they would entertain. And, you know, she looked great to me Sunday morning. I actually loaded her up and then went over and received her at Fasic, and she looked amazing. So we've got her back here at Churchill, and she really came out of the race fine. As far as, you know, our destination or our first race of 2021, you know, well, we'll talk it over with Spendthrift a little bit later on and kind of come up with a plan. But I think their plan is to race all year, which would be phenomenal. I know a couple people had talked about putting her back in training, maybe just running a couple times and then breeding her. But, you know, from all indication that I get from the Spendthrift team is, you know, they would love to try to get her back to the Breeders' Cup at Del Mar next summer.
So
next November.
Is she back with you at Churchill right now?
Yes.
How's she look?
Amazing. She really does. I mean, I think, you know, you could see just in the video that you just put up how well she looked the night after the Breeders' Cup. And she's been back to the track and just jogged a couple of days, but is really on top of it. Now, the weight looks amazing. She shines like a new penny, and she's just really doing well.
Were you in the pavilion when they sold her? Because I know up here at Saratoga, you get the big sales, you know, during the two nights here, and the whole place kind of, when those go, the whole place is geared in. What was it like there if you were in the pavilion?
Yeah, it was amazing. I actually was able to go up top and where some of the media and the videoing, you can actually bid up there as well. But I went up top and on the second floor, and I wanted to film it. My son Blake, he let her in and showed her for the sale and in the ring. So that was a very special moment for our family, and you know, something that's obviously a memory that'll last a lifetime for sure. Like she's given us so many memories that last a lifetime. She's just so special, and just you know, very proud of the filly.
Well, just before we move on from Monomoy Girl, I will just whisper to you, we have a race up here, the Personal Ensign at Saratoga, so keep her in mind. We'd love to see her up here again.
There you go. We'll see what happens over the next couple weeks.
Very good. All right, let's move on to Nick's Go on Saturday as well. And I'm just wondering, as the 2 days played out, it did seem that the track was at least favoring speed. And so, you know, again, betting public was confident, made Knicks Go the 9-5 favorite. We're going to watch the replay here. Knicks Go is the number five horse in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. But again, given the way the track had played over the couple of days, how confident were you coming into this race?
Well, he's a very nice horse, and he received some figures that, you know, showed that, you know, on the right day, he was the fastest horse in the race, and that held up again. I had some question mark with, you know, the number he received in the race prior to the Breeders' Cup, if it was a legit number, given the fact it was a three other than not a grade one race. And it stood up again. But, you know, going in there, I did feel confident. He loves Keeneland. He was training well. And the post, I thought he drew extremely well with the amount of speed and where the other speed drew. So I thought my only instruction to Joel was, you know, take it to him. You know, be aggressive, take it to him, try to clear off if you can. And, you know, he did the best he could, and it worked out extremely well. He's a very, very nice horse. I mean, this horse is – he's been a nice horse from early on. I mean, he was a grade one winner at two. The previous connections did a fantastic job with him. And, you know, we were just very fortunate. We had a setback with him this year. So it's not always been perfect, and we've had to give him time. But when he's right, he's really good. He's shown that several times. He's shown it this year. He showed it in the Breeders' Futurity, the Breeders' Cup as a two-year-old. He's a very, very good horse.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up because I know from hearing you talk before, he did have a little bit of a setback, went to the sidelines. This was only his third start of the year, which was kind of incredible. Talk a little bit about the year he had and the setback and then bringing him back. And as I understand it, when he went into that N3X at Keeneland last time, the Breeders' Cup maybe wasn't even on the agenda.
Never thought about it. I just to be honest with you. But immediately after the race, I mean, you know, I thought, you know, the Breeders' Cup mile is right here. And, you know, cutting back from a mile and 16th to a mile, you get the short stretch, both races at Keeneland. I thought, you know, it was only a good thing. So, yeah, I mean, you know, as far as, you know, he was a two other than to start the year, very accomplished horse, obviously. And it was nice to see that condition. And it's exactly what you want to see as a trainer. In a comeback race, you want to make it you just want to make it as easy as you can that first race, and making it as good of an experience as you can for a horse off a layoff. And with him to have a 2X, you thought, you know, if he's got any run of left, he's you're going to see it, and it should, you know, he should perform well. He did. He gave us enough confidence, or ran well enough, to make us think he could be like an Oakland Park handicap horse, or obviously a horse that could compete at the graded level. Following that race, he had a setback, a minor surgery. June Park, that is the American representative for the Korean Racing Authority, said, you know, maybe we should just retire him. I said, you know, look, give him an opportunity to come back. If he comes back and he's not training like he was, you don't have to run him. And if he does, you know, you still have an opportunity at some grade ones this year. And honestly, our idea was to run in the three other than and use it as a prep for possibly the Clark or the Cigar Mile, the Clark handicap being at Churchill. And when he performed the way he did, the Breeders' Cup there, it was some little bit of a question mark is if he would even get into the mile, given he had no graded stake earnings this year. So he was selected by the committee to run, and you know, very thankful for the Breeders' Cup for allowing him to make the race. And you know, I guess, you know, we'll see what happens moving forward. But you know, it is amazing, you know, how the game can change on you so quick, given, you know, really 5-6 weeks ago we really didn't even think we'd be in this spot.
That's incredible. And I also have to ask you, since we brought up the figures before, that N3X at Keeneland, he pops a 107 buyer. He follows that up in the Breeders' Cup with a 108. But off of a layoff like that, the 107, which was a lifetime best, I don't know the numbers you were looking at. Were they kind of comparable? And are you a bounce guy? Was there any kind of that concern?
Absolutely, there was. You know, he ran a 2.25 off that layoff, and he came back to a 2.25 the other day. So, you know, he put two races, two really, really strong races together back to back. And no, there's always the concern for a horse bouncing off a huge race off the layoff. You know, the only thing was we brought him back, we breezed him three times, and we thought, you know, we would kind of let him tell us if you know, he was ready to run. And like I said, you know, with our weekly check with June Park, the Korea Racing Authority, I mean, just told him, look, he's training great. He's doing well. And, you know, lead him over there and see what happens. And, you know, once I saw the draw and where the other speed were laying, I thought, you know, we got a good shot to make the lead here and maybe carry him the whole way.
Yeah, phenomenal couple of wins there on Saturday. Let's go back and take a look at the two on Friday as well. We'll start with Essential Quality, who you would think has wrapped up an eclipse as well in the two-year-old division with the win. We'll watch the replay, and Essential Quality will be the number five horse here. First couple of races in his career, he was, you know, fairly close to the pace. Last Friday, he was sitting eighth in a field of 14 down the backstretch. What were you feeling, particularly knowing this is a first finish line race?
Not good. You know, going up the backside, I was a little concerned. I thought we would be a little bit closer to the pace. But once I saw the 45, and I saw Jackie's Warrior was not even on the lead, and he was laying third, I thought, you know, they're really yeah, cooking up front. And these horses have run away from us. But the one thing that I have learned in training this horse throughout the summer and fall is, you know, distance really shouldn't be an issue, and he doesn't get tired. So I figured he'd make a run. At the half mile pole, I thought, you know, he's starting to pick off a horse or two, but I'm thinking, you know, he's going to give up some ground trying to do this around the far turn. I thought, you know, he's going to make a run at him, but he could very well flatten out. And, you know, once he moved into fourth, right before they straightened up, I thought, yeah, you know, if he can get to the outside and these horses, you know, start feeling this pace that they've been carrying around there, we could get to them. And once they straightened up, I felt confident that he would come get them. It was a very exciting stretch run. Honestly, out of all four of them, it was probably the most exciting. If you really watch the stretch run at the 16th pole, I mean, he really almost put it into another gear and kicked away from those horses. But he's a colt that we've always thought was going to get better with ground and more distance, and really doesn't seem to have any limitations as far as distance, just given the way he trains, his quick recovery. You go out and work three quarters and with a strong gallop out and come back, and, you know, it almost looks like he went for a routine gallop. So, you know, he's a real neat horse to train. He's very talented, and, you know, he's a horse that definitely make you dream big.
Yeah, and I always like to ask with horses like this, I mean, three starts, three nice wins, two of them in stakes races. Did he kind of tout himself early? When he comes into the barn, is this a kind of horse that, you know, oh, we got something special here?
Yeah, I really did like this colt from the start. He Niall Brennan broke him in Ocala. Cinnabus, he came in with a couple other colts, and he worked with a colt named Inspector Frost, a frosted colt for Godolphin, and they went through their paces early on together. You know, inside outside, swap them up each week, work them from the gate against one another. And Inspector Frost is he's a nice horse. He was third first time, was able to break his maiden at Keeneland in October. But this colt just seemed to always do it a touch, and it just came so easy to him. And once again, just a horse that would never get tired on his gallop out. You know, I never thought he was the fastest horse, like, you know, 21:44 type speed. He was able to get into a very high cruising speed and maintain it for a while. So, you know, he's and another thing too, you know, we started him with blinkers. We took him off to, you know, tinker with him a little bit, but he's a colt that when we did put a small set of blinkers on him and work him from the gate, you know, just, you know, showed a lot of, you know, natural speed. But you know, doing it well within himself and just really seemed to take him to the next level. And he's a very good colt.
Yeah, so as I say, two stakes wins. They've both been around two turns. A two-year-old pro tab in the clubhouse seems like the two-year-old Eclipse winner, and you always have to ask. First of all, where does he go this winter? Because you're going to have horses, I assume, Fairgrounds and Oaklawn. Will he go there? And has there been any conversation about potentially how you move along the Derby trail with him?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, we'll start him out at the Fairgrounds as far as where he'll be stabled. I'll probably move him down there some point, 1st of December. And, you know, we'll take it easy with him for a while. And then, you know, say mid-December, maybe start getting back on the work tab. We'll just kind of let him tell us where he is and what he wants to do for the time being. But, you know, he's very talented. I'm not certain where we'll land as far as a race goes. We'll talk it over with Jimmy Bell of Godolphin. And you know, we'll come up with a plan that, you know, I would think probably – you know, two races maybe before the first Saturday in May. I know the Derby's May 1st this year, so I'm thinking, you know, maybe something, you know, getting started in February somewhere, and maybe another start late March, early April. And, you know, that's just what I'm thinking right now.
Sure.
And, you know, I think in those two starts, he'll tell us if he's worthy of a start in the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, certainly everything we've seen so far says that is a likely possibility. Let's go back and finally, Aunt Pearl, your fourth winner of the weekend that we're talking about, but it was actually the first winner of the weekend, the first Breeders' Cup winner of the weekend for you. And as we talked about essential quality on the backstretch and maybe you having some trepidation of how it would work out, we will watch the stretch run of Aunt Pearl, her style, get out in front and do it, and take us through this one, because when you looked up and you see Fractions, the 22 to start's kind of legitimate, but then 47, 112, 123. Given her style and her class, this is a race where you had to have a good level of confidence as she traveled around the course.
Yeah, for sure. There's no doubt about it. She's really good. She's a really good filly, and as you can see there, I mean, you know, she did it the right way. I mean, she's very good. And she has a lot of speed. I mean, given she has a European pedigree, but she's fast. She's very, very fast. She always has been. You know, she's another one that jumped from the start, displayed a lot of early speed. We only worked her once from the gate. She caught on extremely quick. Everything about her, she's just quick. I mean, just, you know, you pop her out of the gate, you can't take her back. She breaks two lengths in front of everybody else. And it's just, you know, you can't take away what comes easy to a horse. If you do, I just don't think, you know, you're just not doing right by the horse. She's just a very gifted horse with a lot of speed that if you let her do her thing, she's just going to run everybody off her feet. She was able to do that this year. You know, we're going to give her a break, just given the fact there's just not a lot out there for 3-year-old fillies. And, you know, we're get her ready for a spring campaign. We actually are shipping her down to Ocala today for a freshening. We give her a full checkup, and she checked out great. She's going to get about 45 days off and then back into training. She's going to go to Paul Sharp's in Ocala. And, you know, hope to have her back in our barn in January, maybe early to mid-January, and then start looking for, you know, a spot here or there, maybe Keeneland, Churchill, something like that. And, you know, taking her across the pond is definitely a possibility. We'll see, you know, weigh our options with this here in America and see what they offer there as well. I think this is one of the years that we were able to ship across and have some confidence, given the fact no Lasix for our 2-year-olds in America, which, you know, there's only a good thing. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. I've never shipped a horse over there, but I think it would be very exciting. And we definitely have some confidence taking a filly like her over there.
You realize if you go over, you got to get that top hat and tails. It's a whole, it's a whole fashion thing. and you've kind of alluded to it already, but hearing you talk, it sounds like, I mean, she was purchased at Tattersalls in 2019, October yearling sale. And it seems like the ownership group had a number of European owners that they've kind of dispersed to at least two or three trainers, you being one of them with Aunt Pearl. Talk a little bit about how you wound up with Aunt Pearl.
Well, Liz Crowe and Brad Wasbord bought a group of Euros at Tattersalls last fall, and Paul Sharp broke them. And you know, I went down and looked at several of them in March, and you know, they divvied them up and decided who goes where. And we got a handful of them, and a couple of them have yet to make the races. A couple of them had to back off of them a little bit, but Ampro, obviously, she jumped from the get-go. I mean, she was one that kind of you know, stamped herself as a very talented filly from the start. So you know, very fortunate to be involved with those guys. And you know, they are you know, more Americans seem to be going over there looking for talent and coming back with nice solid racehorses that can compete at the graded level in America. So it's definitely a place that, you know, you can pick up horses and be effective on in graded stakes and even on Breeders' Cup Day.
Yeah, and again, you've alluded to it before, but I saw Liz Crowe tweeted out potentially a trip to Royal Ascot next year for her, so that would be a lot of fun. Brad, before we let you go, just a couple other quick questions. I saw some pictures of you after the races with the flowered blanket draped across your shoulders. I'm just curious, as a trainer, do you walk away with some kind of souvenirs like that to display in the office or put on the mantelpiece? And I'm assuming, yeah, no, but that, I don't that, know, do yeah. you get a trainer's trophy after a Breeders' Cup race?
Yes, you do. They give you a nice trophy with a horse. It's kind of somewhat, you know, looks somewhat like a Eclipse Award, but not quite. Not that I know what an Eclipse Award looks like. But
well, this year, maybe.
Maybe a little smaller version. But no, it's nice. And, you know, some of the races you get a Longines watch. So it's, you know, you get a trophy, to say the least. It's and a memory that'll last down to.
Yeah, absolutely. And finally, we did it a little bit earlier when I asked one of the first questions, but I always like to, a trainer like you who has horses at different tracks and whatnot, and you play at the highest level of the game, I know the staff is very important, so I always like to give a trainer an opportunity to give credit, a little love to the staff as well.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, any of these stables that have, you know, a large or a big number of horses like we do, very fortunate, you know, obviously we need the clientele. But yeah, you know, we have obviously four main assistants, Jorge Abregu's at Churchill, Ricky Giannini's at Indiana. He goes to the fairgrounds. Tessa Bisha is at Keeneland and Ellis Park throughout the year. And Dustin Dugas is our New York man. He's been up there for nearly 4 years for us. So, yeah, no, it's a fantastic team. And, you know, just we get along really, really well. I mean, you know, I talk to each of them pretty much every single day and get a rundown. And you know, it really works for me. I mean, I have, you know, talk to each one of them and go over charts and condition books and just how the horses are doing. And, you know, they're all great horsemen. They've all got great backgrounds. You know, Dustin was a jockey. Tessa worked for Jerry Hollendorfer, Bob Baffert, Tony Dutrow. Ricky worked for Neil Howard for several years, and Jorge's been with me 12 years. So, yeah, it's a great collection of assistants that, you know, none of this would be possible without them.
Yeah, and you mentioned clientele, too. I should let you kind of tip your cap to them, because as you've kind of moved along here over the past couple of years, and we've been watching your progress and been very happy for you, you've added, you know, Michael Dubb and Sal Kuhman and Godolphin in there, and so you've moved up the ladder with some very prominent owners as well.
Yeah, no doubt. It's, you know, you obviously got to have stock, and, you know, that's what, you know, these owners have, you know, give us an opportunity with, you know, just like Aunt Pearl. I mean, just, you know, she wasn't cheap. She was supposed to be a runner, and it's worked out extremely well. So, you know, just very thankful for the opportunity. And, you know, you have horses like Essential Quality, obviously, is a homebred, very, you know, well-bred homebred. So, you know, being by Tappet out of an Elusive Quality mare. So, you know, you obviously have to have the stock and it definitely changes the days you're able to perform. You know, and I wouldn't give anything back for those days of having claiming horses. And it just teaches you so much. It really, really does. I think it just really gives you a great foundation moving forward. When you do get the opportunity to have good horses, you know, there's a lot of things that happen with those claiming horses that teach you a lot. And just how to pay attention to condition books and extras and how races may split. It's an opportunity to run, you know, several young horses as opposed to targeting one horse for one race. You know, it's a lot that goes into this, but you know, we love what we do, and you know, we have a passion for it, and we love what we do, and we love to win and win at a high level.
Yeah, and you did that last weekend, and I wanted to have the chance to say congratulations, because it's been fun. We've been past couple of years, you've been very generous with your time with us, either by phone or when we're live on the backstretch up at Saratoga. And so we've been rooting for you right along, and wanted to just take the opportunity to say congratulations on just a fabulous Breeders' Cup weekend last week.
Thanks, Seth. And I always appreciate you having me on, and I really like doing the Capital OTB show. So, hopefully we'll get to meet or chat soon.
Saratoga, we've been knocking wood since the end of Saratoga. The next year at Saratoga, we're all back.
Exactly. Hopefully that's the plan. So I know we'll get through all this, and hopefully we can chat again soon.
Great. Brad, thanks a lot, and congratulations. Brad Cox, after a big weekend at the Breeders' Cup last weekend. Again, thanks to Brad Cox for taking the time to go over what was, again, an incredible weekend for him. And we appreciate it. Again, got to be a busy guy taking all the time. It was fun to talk to Brad. But as I said at the top of the show, with the early post time today at Aqueduct 1150, they're actually already underway for the pregame show. So we wanted to wrap up early, get Brad, and move on to Aqueduct. Andy Serling, the Big A, Anthony Stabile are already giving some commentary on today's Aqueduct card. Do remember, come down today. Pick and putt promotion here at the Clubhouse Racebook in honor of the Masters. Watch the golf, enjoy all the racing action, and maybe get your chance to putt for a prize. You can put your name in a hat if you come down today, and folks will get selected throughout the afternoon. Swing by tomorrow for some NFL football and racing action as well. All of that at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. With Aqueduct kicking off at 11:50, I'll be back in less than an hour with OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. So we'll see you then. We'll throw it now to the NYRA pregame show. See you in about an hour or so.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.